All right, as we come to you, we are in Hanoi. We're in Vietnam. We're on little sleep, but a lot of adrenaline. Write down our toll-free telephone number. We will get to your calls throughout the program today. I think we're going to have our crew do a, what are you going to remember the most? Because we were all just talking about it, about this trip. And we got a lot of us here in the room, believe it or not. And so we'll get to that. I'm going to bring you behind the scenes of what was happening here. And it is amazing, as I was describing yesterday, how we have one party in this country that is only focus is hating Donald Trump. And what these Democrats did yesterday is just the latest example. You know, they claim, just look at the recent examples. They claim for years they care about Dreamers and DACA and the second term of Obama. They're funding a border wall, but now they're immoral. And when the president offers Dreamers and DACA and a deal, they won't even sit down with him. So they don't care about Dreamers and DACA. They claim, what about the furloughed employees? Well, if they would have sat down with the president, the furloughed employees could have gotten paid a lot sooner. But they didn't care because this was their opportunity. Their main agenda item is to bludgeon Trump. You know, every second, every minute, every hour, every day, as I say. And you know, look at the issue. Just look at the comparison. You got a lieutenant governor now of the Commonwealth of Virginia accused of rape and serious sexual assault. Where are all the I believers in the Kavanaugh case? They have gone virtually silent because it's not the issue that they pretend to care so much about. It's the opportunity to bludgeon for political purposes. And there are so many other examples of that. And you see this here. Think back. I remember it would always be the John Lennon, you know, let's dream of peace. Give peace a chance. I dream of a world without nukes. I mean, it was a long time ago where, you know, the Democratic Party swung not quite as hard as where they are today, but they wanted the United States of America to unilaterally disarm our nuclear capability, which means we're sitting ducks. You can't defend liberty and freedom. Guess what? You're not going to keep liberty and freedom. Last century, 100 million souls dead as a result of government tyranny and oppression and dictatorship and despots. 100 million. You know, just take time one day and go on Nat Geo On Demand and watch their amazing series that they have on issues involving. Yeah, what I want is the article about what Democrats said about. Yeah, there you go. The amazing series on World War II. My father fought World War II. I'm just fascinated with all of it. You think how far Hitler got, and you think how many died, and you think of, you know, fascism, Nazism, communism, aligning communism for a long time, the former Soviet Union, till, of course, Hitler invaded Russia. And you think of all of the people dead as a result, and if it's not for the United States of America and a guy by the name of Winston Churchill, probably one of, if not the most courageous historic figure ever, when the bombing of Britain is going on every day, he's walking among the people. He's among the people. Okay, you think in any other country, the president, the prime minister of that country, is going to do such a thing? Anyway, so you see this contrast that I talk about. I said, I want you to really, yesterday I said, I want you to just absorb this moment. It is so defining. And I think we're going to look back at this moment and we are going to remember that they're so petty. They're like petulant kids. And they can't even, you ever have you deny a kid a cookie? You know, you think about it, the kid is fixated on the cookie. Now, at least the kid is mature enough eventually. You know, I've watched Linda discipline her son, Liam, sometimes. Liam, mommy said, what did mommy say? All right, you know what happens.
Are
if
you
I
trying
get to three.
Say I don't have a good method? Is that what I should be taking from this?
One, two, and then it always stops at two. And then it's like, Liam, you know, what if mommy gets to three? You know what happens when I get to three. Okay, Liam, one.
You know, it doesn't work on
two,
you either. So clearly I need a new method because you don't listen either.
Okay. And never gets to three. So Liam just keeps doing what Liam wants to do. And he wins.
As do all men in my life.
Oh, wow. But we're going to look back in this moment and we're going to see, wow, the petulant, immature, childish. There's a lack of seriousness among people that claim to be leaders, that claim to want to keep us safe and secure. A hypocrisy at a spectacular level. And those are only two issues that happened recently. And all the years that Democrats think and say that they want a world free of nukes. You know, I'll give you some examples. And I'm going to go back to 2015. Who was the president in 2015? That would be Barack Hussein Obama. And, you know, if this is like the big hypocrisy of the water's edge. No, I got it. Thanks. And Washington Post ran a headline, Harry Reid, Republicans trying to directly intervene with Obama's Iranian talks. And he said, lashing out at a letter released by 47 Senate Republicans warning Iranian leaders against the deal with Western powers as a hard slap in the face to Obama's most insane proposal. This makes, you know, Neville Chamberlain and Munich and peace in our time. Just how do you ever give Iranian mullahs the chant death to America, death to Israel, threaten to wipe Israel off the map, wipe the United States off the map? How do you just say, okay, we're going to give you all this money. We just expect you to be nicer to us, okay? And that's it. And we'll go happily ever after off into the meadows. And, you know, it's, life is going to be sunshine, rainbows, and cotton candy, and Starbursts, Skittles. I'm trying to be more modern. I could have said O. Henry. What do you call it? An O. Henry bar? Remember those? Milky Ways? But, you know, Reed, this is not a time to undermine our commander-in-chief purely out of spite. That's what Democrats were saying in 2015. It's unprecedented for one political party to directly intervene in an international negotiation with the sole goal of embarrassing the president of the United States. What was yesterday all about? This circus with Michael Cohen. They couldn't do it on any other day? Really? You know, oh, Dianne Feinstein, I believe herself. Quiet about the Virginia lieutenant governor. This is a highly inappropriate, unprecedented incursion into the president's prerogative to conduct foreign affairs and is not benefiting this chamber or befitting this chamber. Oh, crazy Uncle Joe Biden, that Republicans ignored two centuries of precedent and threatened to undermine the ability of any future president to negotiate with foreign countries. And Washington Post, Pelosi. Constant talk of impeachment hurts the U.S. standing abroad. You can't make all of this up. I got another Pelosi quote, Washington Post in 2014. It's a cost to our reputation in the world that once we get a new president, we will find a reason to impeach him. They're describing themselves on a level we've never seen before. President at the press conference early this morning, I know most of you probably were sleeping. I hope you were, but I enjoyed being there. It was actually really fun. And the president said this should never happen. What we have gone through, the day that we went through, where you have people trying to bludgeon him, damage him. He is abroad, and this is not some small stakes negotiation. This is about safety, security for future generations. This is about denuclearization of the entire Korean Peninsula. This would benefit your children and grandchildren. This would make the world not totally safe, but a safer place. And if you think that horrible things can't happen in war, I urge you to go Google how many human souls were destroyed in the last 100 years, the prior century. How many? Because of fascism, Nazism, communism, Imperial Japan, dictators, despots, Pol Pot, killing fields, Stalin's Russia, you know, the Holocaust, World War II. Think of the cost involved, the human tragedy, human souls as a result of all this. But that's where their mind is at. And if it's not there, then they're just focused on literally taking the greatest governmental system ever designed by man, one predicated on a belief that we're endowed by our creator, which is a system of belief that believes in the individual and talents and freedom and not government security from the minute you're born to the minute you die. Although I guess now that's even in question, considering Democrats clearly are obsessed with not just late-term abortion, but now abortion up to the moment of birth or even maybe after a woman's dilating, or a governor that would actually suggest that, well, first we'll deliver the baby, we'll make sure the baby's comfortable, and then the mother will decide if the baby needs any type of resuscitation. We'll let the mom decide whether the baby lives or dies. And then we'll have a discussion later, maybe tea and crumpets, maybe a cocktail with the doctor and the mother after the kid either lived or died, whether her thumb went up or down. Sounds like, what is this, Gladiator? This is a Roman, you know, is this Caesar and the games of Rome that we're talking about? Let me decide. Well, do I like the color of the eyes, hair? Imagine, think of how liberals love to talk about animals. Would they ever do that to a cat? A dog? How do you get to the point? It's not about abortion. This is infanticide. This is a living human soul that represents everything that is innocent. If we as a society don't protect that, it so defines us in a way I'd never want to be defined. All right, got to take a quick break. I'm going to bring you behind the scenes. I interviewed the president. It was the only interview that he gave immediately following, and I was so glad the president walked away. And I'll tell you why, and I'll explain all of that. So the president comes back, I do the interview. I go out into the press room, like I did in Singapore, watching the press conference, and I got called on by the president, which was pretty cool. I'm sure some of the hate Trump media mob love that.
Mr. President, poor thank Jimmy you. Acosta. Mr. Secretary, good to see you. Mr. President, if you could elaborate a little bit more.
All right. No, we'll get to that in a second. All right. But listen, we are in Vietnam. We're also going to have Jim Jordan is going to join us. Wow. He was a rock star. Mark Meadows yesterday. They were both great. You know, there are more than 34 million American smokers. Now, I bet that finding a satisfying alternative to cigarettes is at the top of your list if you're a smoker. Look, I've been there before. But after many years of smoking, I finally made the switch to Juul. There's no more worrying about the way my clothes smell, worrying about what people are going to say. With Juul, everything is so much easier. Now, Juul is a vaporizer that contains nicotine for a satisfying transition. When I found Juul, it was a complete game changer. Now, Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to cigarettes. From its simple-to-use interface to its clean technology, well, Juul has no cigarette ash, odor, or mess. So if you're one of the 34 million adults who smoke, know that there is an alternative to cigarettes. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's nothing like you've tried, visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. And warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. All right, as we roll along from Hanoi, we're in Vietnam. Amazing things happened yesterday, and it was while all this chaos and insanity is going on in Washington, the president, here he is, some 20 plus hours in the air from wheels up to wheels down, negotiating something that could pay deep dividends for generations to come. And you look at the shallow, the pettiness, the partisanship, the obsessive, compulsive, psychotic, nonstop hatred of the media mob and the Democratic mob against the president. All of that's happening. But what the president did is even more, was, it still is such a unbelievable lesson. The president, as usual, telegraphs everything that he's thinking, everything that he's going to do. If the media ever really wanted to know the mind of Donald Trump, instead of speculating that somehow, well, Donald Trump must be listening to Sean Hannity. No, like for on the wall issue of the emergency declaration. No, he wasn't listening to me. You out there in the fake media, the hate Trump media mob, you weren't listening to him because he kept saying it again and again and again. The only difference between me and you is I actually listen. And you can't filter it through the prism of hatred and your worldview of disgust with all things Trump. Well, it's the same thing what happened here in Vietnam. The president had been saying all week, I want the right deal. I don't want any deal. I want the right deal. It's not the right deal. I'm not going to take anything that's not the right deal. And I have one bit of advice, and then I'll go into more detail on the other side of this break. If they really want to know the mind of Donald Trump, I'm giving them helpful hints on how to be better hosts, but they won't do it. Read The Art of the Deal. One of the main points is when you negotiate, you're always willing to stay, walk away up to the last second. That's what he did.
Well, and we're working towards something, but we didn't sign anything today. It didn't quite work out. I would say that I wasn't satisfied, and perhaps he wasn't satisfied. Good relationship, but I decided that this wasn't the right time to sign something. So we'll see what happens over a period of time. Well, they wanted to denuke certain areas, and I wanted everything. And the sanctions are there, and I didn't want to give up the sanctions unless we had a real program. Mm-hmm. And they're not ready for that, and I understand that fully. I really do. I mean, they spent a lot of time building it, and that doesn't mean the world has to be happy. But I wanted them to denuke. As far as Cohn is concerned, he's convicted. He's a liar. He's defrauded at a high level. He's got a lot of problems. And, you know, it was very interesting because he lied so much. I watched some of it. I actually was able to watch some of it. He lied so much. And yet he said, when it came to collusion, the whole hoax with the Russia collusion,
right.
It's just a witch hunt hoax. And very, by the way, very, very bad for our country because it really stops you from doing what you're supposed to be doing. He said no collusion.
All right, that is a part of my interview that will air in its entirety. It was the only interview that the president gave after a summit with Kim Jong-un. We do cover a lot of ground. We cover Michael Cohn. We cover the Mueller report. We cover immigration. We cover the New Green Deal. We cover, obviously, the behind the scenes and everything that happened. I know that this is so reminiscent in my mind of what happened with Reagan and Reykjavik. And for whatever reason, there is an expectation among the left and especially the hate Trump media mob that if you go to a high-risk summit for something really big, deep, and profound, that if you don't get the deal, that somehow that was a failure. When really in the history showed us with Reykjavik and Reagan and Gorbachev, that's not the case. And it's not the case here in Vietnam either. You know, I was saying just before we went to the break, I said the media never wants to know Donald Trump. They can't get filtered through the prism of compulsive, psychotic hatred that they have for him every second, minute, hour of every day. I wasn't watching any TV. There's not a lot of American TV here. They have fake news CNN on. But I was told that back in the States that while the president is literally shaking hands, sitting with Kim Jong-un, hopefully making the world a better place, that the media couldn't barely break away for a second from their Michael Cohn coverage. And Michael Cohn, by the way, as I predicted, and we'll get to this later when Jim Jordan joins us, Michael Cohn now has two criminal referrals as a result of being used by the Democratic Party, because anybody that cared one lick about Michael Cohn would never, ever, 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 ever allowed him to raise his right hand and go under oath again and risk another lying to Congress felony. You know, you would think 3 years in jail. These, remember, all of these Democrats, we played a montage the other night on TV. They hate Michael Cohen. They hated this guy. But now that they can use him, they're going to use him. And sadly, there are now two criminal referrals. One about not registering the Foreign Registration Act, which became a big issue in the Paul Manafort case, as you know. And the other is there's issues involving false statements that he made, the very thing that he got in trouble for and admitted to in the past. Like, for example, there's apparently 100 people that would testify and contradict his statement that he never wanted to work in the White House. That's easily something that's going to be provable. Or the Women for Cohen Twitter account. You know, I'm told that he paid by check, the person that set it up. Or, you know, the Farah disclosure, that's going to be a big thing. Or that I can tell you that Donald Trump didn't want to win. Are you kidding? He was obsessed with winning. Well, no person, if you didn't have a desire to win, and this was just a marketing opportunity for you, why would you ever travel like Donald Trump traveled in the final days in the lead up to the 2016 election? And I can tell you another thing, because I was on the road a lot. You know, if I ever was talking to him and I'd say, well, then you won't win. You got his attention. One thing, Donald Trump never wants to lose. Ever, ever, ever. But again, they don't want to know who Donald Trump is. And they bring up all these other issues. You know, I just happen to know a couple because I was dragged into that case. And I'll say to Michael Cohen's credit that Michael Cohen and his lawyers said that I was a third client in the courtroom, and I've never been his client. We've never had that relationship or anything that resembles in any possible way. He was never my lawyer. He never, ever was involved in any legal issue in my life, period. And remember the circumstances, because he had two clients, and one was the issue of Stormy Daniels, and the other was some guy with a Playboy or Penthouse model, whatever, payment. And the media said, oh, he probably fixed something for Hannity. Hannity's got that problem. Let's crush Hannity. And I had to go out immediately with, I think we tweeted it out that day. Remember, it happened like 5 to 3 in before radio one day. I think it was the worst 20 minutes of radio I did, because I'm not paying attention. I'm half writing the response that this is false, that he's never been my lawyer. He's never worked on any case, especially any case involving a third party. And I've never retained him. I've never been billed by him. I've never paid him. And I just was putting out every single solitary thing. I said, oh, maybe once I might have asked him a question about real estate, not even a legal question. And the media went nuts.
He stood and up and he said the name Sean Hannity.
How did he say it? Yeah. Was it like Sean Hannity? Sean Hannity.
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 Hannity. Hannity.
Hannity.
Hannity.
Hannity.
Hannity. Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
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 Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
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 Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
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 Sean 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 Hannity.
Look, you know, I'm in radio 30 years. I've been on Fox 23 years, and I kind of you build up immunity to this sort of thing. And it never upset me. It disappointed me. And he did apologize to me personally, which I accepted his apology. And I looked at it like, okay, this guy's got enough going on in his life. He's got a wife, he's got two kids, and he has to be living through hell. And I just dropped it. That was the end of it for me. And I think it was the right thing to do. And I didn't regret my decision in any way. But I, you know, there's certain things that I know that were coming out yesterday. I mean, I remember specifically asking him both privately and a number of times about this deal. I've never told the president anything about this deal. I use my own money. I know he never knew, never told him. Must have said that 12, 14, 15 times. And I know I can name five other people that he said it to. So to put him in that position, knowing what his life is going to be, is pretty amazing. But you juxtapose the pettiness, the superfluous nature of this, the willingness to put somebody's life in jeopardy again for your own political purposes. It's pretty outrageous to me. And now you're going to have two criminal referrals as a result of this. And I kept saying yesterday that I think this is now a moment that will define America for many years to come, because Americans now, the veil is being lifted off who this radical extreme Democratic Socialist Party, what they really believe in and what their, quote, vision is for America. And one of the great hypocrisies, I thought they would care about denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I know they support appeasement of despots and dictators and people around the globe, like the mullahs in Iran and Bill Clinton's. This is a good deal for American people, you know, trying to bribe Kim Jong-un's father. You might listen. It's a good deal for American people. I promise. Blah, blah, blah. Goes on and on. So what happened yesterday is, if you pay attention to Donald Trump and you listen to what he says, and he does all of these gaggles, you know, these scrums, as we call them in the business, in the Oval Office all the time. People say, well, why doesn't Sarah Sanders have press conferences? Because he's doing them all. So the behind the scenes is the president, just like he telegraphed repeatedly that he would use the emergency declaration on the wall, he was telegraphing here and before, managing everybody's expectations, that he will only take the right deal. And that goes with the philosophy and his business acumen that he has used his entire life and telegraphed in his book, The Art of the Deal. And maybe some of you have experienced this. If you are wanting a new house so bad, you're going to overpay. If you are wanting that car so bad, you're dead. And people sense it. The president, you have to be willing to walk away. And the analogy with Reykjavik, I think so applicable here, is liberals first said about Donald Trump, evil empire, later, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. They predicted he'd lead us, a California cowboy would lead us to a nuclear holocaust. Reaganomics would destroy the economy. They mocked it. And, you know, or even George W. Bush with Axis of Evil. And when the president started out, what were they predicting when he was saying, oh, little rocket man making fun of Kim Jong-un as he was firing one rocket after another over Japan and it started getting serious. And then he started threatening Guam and the entire peninsula and the people of South Korea, and then started talking about nukes that can reach the continental United States. And then the president went out with, little fire and fury, little rocket man, and my button's bigger than yours, and my button works. So all of a sudden, Reagan walks away from Reykjavik, and the same thing, you know, is happening among others. The media, oh, you didn't get a deal? Why would you get a deal for the sake of getting a deal? How is it in any way logical? Now, I know that they were willing to talk about, I think you call it Yongbyon is the official nuclear site, the biggest one that they have in North Korea. He was willing to dismantle that, but he wasn't willing to dismantle all of his nuclear sites. And the president, and you'll see this tonight in the interview that I had with him right after the summit, when he said, no, I want full denuclearization. And that was the goal. Now, Kim Jong-un did say, when asked, are you willing to talk about and be involved in denuclearization? I wouldn't be here otherwise if I wasn't. So clearly that was signaled. Also, I asked the president, kind of teased everybody when he said, well, I hope the chairman says publicly what he said to us last night at dinner. And what he said, I hope he says it publicly. And I asked him about that. What had he said at dinner? So I think a lot of people really don't know what took place. And my understanding is, I piece this all together, is the president would never take a deal that didn't include full, complete, verifiable, on-site, location, on-demand with anybody. Otherwise, what good is it? If you're really going to lift the sanctions, open trade, a new beginning, set up, you know, diplomatic relations in Pyongyang in the United States, if you're going to do all of that, you first got to get what you want. And the president was clear. Full denuclearization. To me, that is strength. To me, that will lead to peace. To me, that will end in success. To me, that is just simply the right thing to do. To take a deal and be able to wave a paper around, you know, or declare like Neville Chamberlain, peace in our time, or to drop billions of dollars on the tarmac of Iran, or Bill Clinton bribing Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, it never works. The only one that got the job done was the guy that said, this is an evil empire. The only guy that got the job done was the guy that walked away from the table at Reykjavik because he wasn't giving up strategic defense, which maybe years from now will go down as Ronald Reagan's biggest, best, greatest legacy. We don't know what human events could evolve over time. And this will go down similarly in history is Kim Jong-un got a message yesterday. This is the only deal you're getting. You want sanctions lifted. You want economic opportunity for your people. You've got to totally, completely give up your nukes. Otherwise, what good would it be? The president goes into great detail in our interview tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. And we talk about a lot of stuff. We also talk about the Michael Cohen hearing. We talk about the Mueller report, people saying it might come out next week. And he has very strong statements. This should never happen to any other president. Again, a 2-year witch hunt. We talk about the borders. We talk about the new Green Deal. I asked him about that. The only interview he gave, we'll do that. And I also got to ask a question. He called on me during the bigger press conference, which I thought was fun. All right, hour 2, Sean Hannity Show, as we continue our coverage from Vietnam. The only interview the president gave right after the summit with Kim Jong-un is with me, and it will air in its entirety tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. I have said many, many times on this program that but for the guys in the Freedom Caucus, and a couple of senators, I can name a handful, that I look at the Republican Party as weak, timid, at times even spineless and visionless. And, you know, they make all these grandiose promises. We're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. And you get these phony, fake votes, show votes, so that they can go home and say they voted to repeal it. And then when it matters, we can't do that. No. And it's very frustrating. And I know it's very frustrating for all of you. I've always said, and most of you know, that I'm a registered conservative in New York. I know many of you would be registered as a conservative if you could in your state as well. But there really isn't an option with the new radical extreme Democratic Socialist Party. I mean, I'm a conservative, but I sometimes suck it up a lot, and I'll vote for people just because it's the lesser of two evils. It's not even close. If you're going to support the new Green Deal and the other guy isn't, I don't have to do a whole lot of thinking there. But if it wasn't for the Freedom Caucus, they fight to keep their promises. They fight hard. They don't back down. They stand on principle. And all of this was on display yesterday at the hearings. We're going to be joined by the Jim Jordan in a second. Jim Jordan first, going after Michael Cohen in what was an extremely powerful moment, along with his closing statement, which I thought was powerful. Listen to this.
We know Mr. Cohen has been dishonest in the past. That's why he's going to prison in 2 months. But there are things today that he said during the several hours of questioning that just don't add up either. He said he never defrauded any bank. He was having a conversation questioning from Mr. Comer. Obviously, that's not true because he's going to prison for that very offense. Your first big hearing, the first announced witness of the 116th Congress, is a gentleman who is going to prison in 2 months for lying to Congress. I don't think that's what we should be focused on. You have a history of lying over and over and over again. And frankly, don't take my word for it. Take what the court said. Take what the Southern District of New York said. Cohen did crimes that were marked by a pattern of deception and that permeated his professional life. These crimes were distinct in their harms but bear a common set of circumstances. They each involved deception and were each motivated by personal greed and ambition. A pattern of deception for personal greed and ambition. And you just got 30 minutes of an opening statement where you trashed the president of the United States of America. Mr. Cohen, how long did you work for Donald Trump?
Approximately a decade.
10 years?
That's correct.
And you said all these bad things about the president there in that last 30 minutes, and yet you worked for him for 10 years? All those bad things, I mean, if it's that bad, I can see you working for him for 10 days, maybe 10 weeks, maybe even 10 months. But you worked for him for 10 years. Mr. Cohen, how long did you work in the White House?
I never worked in the White House.
And that's the point, isn't it, Mr. Cohen?
No, sir.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not, sir.
You wanted to work in the White House.
No, sir.
You didn't get brought to the dance.
I mean, he just took it right to him. And this would not have happened, you know, without the Freedom Caucus. Now, as a result, I had predicted this would happen, that the Democrats were using Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen was now, anybody that cared one lick about Michael Cohen would never, ever, ever, on the eve or 2 months away from 3 years in jail, let him go under oath again with his history of telling lies and lying to Congress and on the loan application, et cetera, and the tax issue. Well, there's now two criminal referrals. We had one yesterday. You saw the exchange with him and Mark Meadows about the issue of the FARA registration. The problem is, how do you say it wouldn't be applicable when they brought the whole thing up in the Paul Manafort case? Well, now Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, who led the way for the committee yesterday, said they sent a letter. Now, first a criminal referral on the one issue, now another one as it relates to going right to the Department of Justice for perjury and knowingly making false statements again. And the letter says that Cohen's testimony was a spectacular, brazen attempt to knowingly and willingly testify falsely and fictitiously to numerous material facts. His testimony included intentionally false statements designed to make himself look better on a national stage. Mr. Cohen's prior conviction for lying to Congress merits a heightened suspicion that he has yet again testified falsely before Congress. Anyway, Jim Jordan is with us. Well, for example, the idea that a simple thing, like he didn't want to work for the administration. He didn't want a job. There are, apparently, I'm told, are a number of text messages that say just the opposite.
Yeah, thank you for those kind words. And you're exactly right. Why they would put Michael Cohen on the stand is beyond me. But I do think, and this is why Mark and I sent the letter today to the Attorney General, we do think there was six occasions, and the one that's most significant is the one you just brought up. The idea that he did not want to work at the White House, even CNN said it was widely known that he was seeking a position in the Trump administration, but was not given one. So for him to say no, sir, when we asked him that question, and to deny it time and time again, made no sense, and that's why we've sent the letter we have, along with five other situations where we think he said something different than what we know to be fact.
What are the other five examples you have?
Well, one of them is the whole Michael Cohen, Women for Cohen, that he had nothing to do with that. He paid the firm, and we've heard testimony from or got statements from the firm itself that is not accurate. There's the situation you described that Mark brought up relative to how he filled out his disclosure form and the whole idea that foreign registration, there's that issue and a host of others that we think warrant the Attorney General of the United States looking into. And we got to come back to one basic thing too. This guy, we think in some ways is almost delusional. Remember what he said yesterday in the hearing. He said, Michael Cohen, he said he himself was responsible for launching the Trump for President campaign, because in 2011, he put together some website for President Trump. I mean, this is craziness, but they put him on the stand. He said all kinds of things that we think are, again, not accurate.
Listen, I don't want to pile on.
I hear you.
But honestly, the idea that Michael Cohen thought that that Donald Trump had no belief at all that he was going to win or wanted to win, and he was viewing this all as one big marketing opportunity. That is so false that it's beyond recognition. And I'll tell you why. If you ever want to get the president's attention and during the campaign, you know, well, you're not going to win. If you ever say those words, you got his attention.
You bet.
Because
you bet.
And I don't think he would have traveled all of those cities and towns in the final weeks of that campaign fighting that hard to lose. If you wanted
exactly
to lose,
right.
You could have, you know, done one stop a day.
No, you're exactly right.
I think the Democrats, they didn't care. I mean, what is your and Lanny Davis has responded and saying he testified truthfully before the House Oversight Committee, took full responsibility. He also backed up much of his testimony with documents. Those documents
Sean, you're exactly right. They were using Michael Cohen. This is step one in their crazy plan to impeach the president. Remember two fundamental facts. Last week, Tom Steyer, mega donor for the Democrats, organized a town hall in whose district? Jerry Nadler, chairman of the Judiciary Committee. This week, Tom Steyer, mega donor for the Democrats, organizes a town hall where? Baltimore, Maryland, district of Elijah Cummings, chairman of the Oversight Committee, where this hearing took place yesterday. This is step one. They could find no one better. This is the best they could come up with, a guy that's going to prison in 2 months for lying. But this is how they're going to launch their impeachment because they got nothing else to go on. So they had to start with a guy, Michael Cohen, who was delusional, who thinks he launched the president's campaign for president 8 years ago, whenever he did that. That's who they used. He was their patsy yesterday, and you're right. It's unfortunate, but they used him, and that's what yesterday was all about.
Okay, so we had a view and a ruling that politics stops at the water's edge, and I'm looking at this circus, and thankfully you were all there to shed some light on this and bring a whole other perspective to the hearings yesterday, because otherwise it was insane. But it did for a full day. They successfully drew a lot of attention away from issues that maybe somewhat insignificant, you know, peace and security for the Korean Peninsula, no more threats against the continental United States, Guam, no more rockets being fired over Japan, remain sent home, hostages freed. Why talk about those things? What if the Republicans did this and it was Obama as president?
I mean, Sean, you're right. That when the president's trying to make the world a safer place, they're focusing on this kind of exercise, which was just completely, completely ridiculous. And we saw that play out yesterday with Mr. Cohen on the witness stand.
All right, we'll come back. We'll continue from Vietnam. My full interview with the president tonight at 9 on the Fox News Channel. And more on the other side and our news roundup and information overload hour. Dan Hoffman all stopping by. All right, as we continue with our friend Jim Jordan, the congressman from Ohio, was a rock star yesterday. What did you make of the exchange, which I thought was unbelievable? Now, we know all about Congresswoman Tlaib and, you know, the MFA remark that she made.
Yeah.
Some of her radical associations, et cetera. And I watched this, and then I saw your colleague and friend, Mark Meadows, really, I don't think I ever saw him that angry, but he was hiding the anger. He was controlled. And then I watched the exchange with him and Elijah Cummings, which I thought was amazing.
Yep. Yeah. No, I mean, Sean, you know Mark Meadows. Mark is probably my best friend, certainly my best friend in Congress, and this is one of the most honorable individuals I've ever been around. And for Congresswoman Tlaib to reference and say things the way she did and go after the character of Mr. Meadows was absolutely wrong. And I think everyone who was in that committee room knew it. Everyone who knows Mark Meadows knew it. I thought Mark handled it like a gentleman that he is. And it was just flat out wrong. But again, this is where they are today. The left will do all kinds of things that just are not appropriate. I'm glad that the chairman said the things he did about Mark and that you got to see the friendship that generally exists between those two individuals.
You know, that was, I thought, and I didn't know about that friendship, and I would assume you probably have a similar relationship to him.
Yes, yes. Look, we disagree on policy, but I respect Mr. Cummings as an individual, obviously, and appreciate him, and we've had a good working relationship over the years.
Who made the decision? Who said, oh, we'll schedule it this day or we won't reschedule it, knowing the high-stakes negotiations that are going on in Vietnam with somebody trying to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula?
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's the chairman's call. So ultimately, it was Mr. Cummings' call. I'm sure there was consultation with the Democrat leadership, i.e. Speaker Pelosi. But ultimately, it was their call. But remember, they had postponed this once. But I think they got themselves in this situation when you announced this clear back before they took over the Congress. After the election, they announced this. This was their first big hearing. This was their star witness, a guy who is going to prison for four distinct federal crimes, one of which is lying to Congress. That's who you name as your first star witness. I believe he was the first announced witness for the 116th Congress, their first guy they announced for this whole new Congress. So when you do all that and then schedule it while the President of the United States is overseas working on the extremely important work he was doing relative to North Korea and, as you say, the Korean Peninsula, that shows you, again, how committed they are to going after President Trump, much more focused on that than they are on doing what's best for the country. And, again, that's the sad state of affairs we find ourselves.
Oh, and I think if this were the opposite and this was Barack Obama and Republicans were acting this way back at home, what would the reaction have been?
Well, I mean, you know, there's two standards. And this is, again, this is what drives your listeners, your viewers and the American people crazy, is this whole double standard concept. One set of rules for the Democrats, one set of rules for Republicans, one set of rules for us regular people, a different set if your name is Clinton or Comey or Strzok or Page or McCabe. A whole different, and it's never supposed to be that in this country. It's supposed to be equal treatment under the law, and it's supposed to be fair and impartial reporting from the press, which we never get. And that's what drives Americans crazy, and that's why they so appreciate this president, because this president is coming here and fighting to do what he told the American people he was going to do. And it's our job, when he's fighting the good fight and getting a raw deal, it's our job to defend him, and that's what we're trying to do as well.
Well, again, I say without the Freedom Caucus, what did you think of the president walking away? I'm glad he walked away. Real quick answer.
Yeah, it's like Reagan. Sometimes you have to walk away to get the real deal, to get the best deal, to get what's good for the safety of the United States of America and what's good for the safety of the world. And I view it just like Reagan did.
Well, thanks for all you did yesterday, Congressman Jordan.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you. And we'll see you soon. When we come back, Dan Hoffman here in Vietnam. The full interview with the president, 9 Eastern on Fox and Hannity.
Mr. President, if you could elaborate a little bit more. We have some history. President Reagan walked away in Reykjavik. A lot of condemnation at the time, and it ended up working out very well in the end for the United States. Was this mostly your decision, what message would you want to send Chairman Kim as he's listening to this press conference about the future and your relationship?
Well, Sean, I don't want to say it was my decision, because what purpose is that? I want to keep the relationship. We will keep the relationship. We'll see what happens over the next period of time. But as you know, we got our hostages back. There's no more testing. And one of the things, importantly, that Chairman Kim promised me last night is, regardless, he's not going to do testing of rockets and nuclear. Not going to do testing. So, you know, I trust him and I take him at his word. I hope that's true. But in the meantime, we'll be talking.
All right. That was me. The president, this was right after I did the interview with him. He only did one scheduled interview. That was with me. That'll air tonight. They've only been airing small clips on the Fox News channel. We got into every subject imaginable. And so it's like in Singapore, it's a massive room, tons of cameras, photographers, journalists from all over the world. And surprisingly, a fairly civil press corps, but I've got to imagine because the international press was there. Anyway, 24 now till the top of the hour as we continue from Hanoi in Vietnam. The interview with the president airs tonight on the Fox News Channel in toto. The entire time we have been here, our friend Dan Hoffman has been with us, a Fox News contributor and now a member of the President's Intelligence Advisory Board. And Dan, good to see you. Thanks for all your work, hard work this week. And you were on the set with us last night. And when did this President's Intelligence Advisory Board issue happen? I didn't know.
I was appointed to the board a few weeks ago. It's a real honor to serve. You know, when I left the government and retired in February 2017, I had no intention of having much to do again with the government. This opportunity presented itself, and I'm honored to do my civic duty.
Yeah, well, you spent how many years in the intelligence community, and you can give as many details as you want, which probably means none.
I served about 30 years in the U.S. government, served a lot of tours overseas, and was a chief of station in the Middle East and South Asia and in Russia as well. But, you know, this is been a different optic for me coming out here to Vietnam and seeing it on the media side. And I can tell you that my past has given me a real appreciation for what the president was doing today. One of the things that I was particularly impressed with was how he empowered the intelligence community. Some have been critical of his relationship with the intelligence community. Today, he highlighted that he was using U.S. intelligence in his meeting with Kim Jong-un, holding Kim Jong-un accountable for all of those sites that Kim wasn't admitting that he had for ballistic missiles and nuclear weapons.
Well, he kept saying, so the deal that was offered, the president, apparently the largest site they have, the one that's most problematic, but he was very clear, yeah, well, we have our satellite images, and we know the other ones that are all around the country, and when you really think and you dig deep down into this, what Kim was testing, what he wanted to see, is if he gets everything he wants, and basically just, you know, a little carrot for the president seems like a big deal. I've already given you the remains and the hostages, and I'm not firing rockets anymore. And the president did say to me, he did get an assurance that will not go back to that point. But it wouldn't make any sense at all, because he still would then have the capacity to ramp up his nuclear program, probably from the minute that the deal is signed.
Right. Kim Jong-un was talking about the Yongbyon nuclear facility, and that's fine. But what the president was doing, what President Trump was doing in the spirit of President Ronald Reagan, was he was using his intelligence. We steal secrets. We recruit spies. We produce all source analysis. And then it's over to the president to take that intelligence and incorporate it into his foreign policy, which is exactly what you saw the president do. Now, the president was clear from the start. Realistic expectations. He's not in any rush to do anything. And sometimes, as he showed us all yesterday, you got to walk away from a bad deal in order to get the right deal.
You know, it's so funny. And I think this makes the president unique in the sense that he's not afraid to take a risk. He didn't need a predetermined outcome. And by going into a situation like that, that means you might walk away. And what frustrates me is somebody who's known him for so many years. And if you really wanted to get to know the mind of Donald Trump, all you really need to do is read The Art of the Deal. If you want to know what happened right here in Vietnam yesterday, read The Art of the Deal, because one of the main points that he makes in that book is that if you want to make a good deal, you have got to be willing to stand up, walk away at the last minute. Now, based on things I'm piecing together, it was the president that walked away from the deal. And I would imagine Chairman Kim, their strategy was, oh, they're going to want this because they probably want the win. They want the success. And look at what these idiots back in Washington are doing to him. And he would love to be able to go back and say, oh, I got a deal. Well, we've had those deals. We had that deal with Bill Clinton and Kim Jong-il, Kim Jong-un's father. We had that deal with the mullahs in Iran. And in this case, the president has kept the sanctions in place. He's gotten a lot of wins on a lot of areas. You mentioned this main facility. What's it called?
Yongbyon.
And that is what I think their biggest facility by far, right?
Right.
And, okay, that's not enough. So he did what I would want him to do, show strength, be willing to, you know, put yourself out there for something significant like a better, safer world. But if it's not going to be the right deal, well, we'll come back and talk another day or it won't happen.
You know, in my experience, there's no question that United States domestic politics can influence and sometimes interfere with foreign policy. The president didn't let that happen yesterday. You know, the Kim Jong-un's hermit kingdom, aptly named, but these guys do track Twitter and the news. And maybe Kim Jong-un called an audible yesterday, having seen what we saw in the House of Representatives with Michael Cohen, and thought, well, maybe I can slip one by the president, offer him up a deal that's good for us and bad for him because he needs this more than I do. And the president did not allow the domestic turmoil back home to influence his performance out here. That's a significant message to Kim Jong-un and the international community. And Sean, it has an impact on the upcoming summit in China. We're not going to take a bad deal from them either. And the president is immune to that.
I know that 1,000%. I tell some stories or anecdotes that I give to the audience. And everyone in the media is always speculating about what the relationship I have with the president is. They don't know. I'll never tell them. Do we talk? That's none of their business. I neither confirm nor deny any sources or friends in life that I talk to. And if anyone in the media wants to know, give me a list of all the people you talk to all the sources you use, and then I'll make a deliberate, considered decision on the issue. Let me go back to what Kim said, and I thought this was interesting. He said, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't willing to talk about denuclearization, and I was hoping to make a deal today. It was in his head. Now, the president also said, well, I hope Chairman Kim will say to you all, meaning the media, exactly what he said at dinner last night, meaning that sounds like, and I asked the president about this, and he gives an interesting answer tonight that will air on Fox, but to me, that sounds like, yeah, I'm willing to make that deal. And maybe he got cold feet. Maybe his advisor said, no, I think you got an opportunity. Look what's going on in America. They're trashing him over there.
You know, I don't think there's a straight line in the negotiation towards eventual denuclearization. There's going to be a lot of stops and starts. There's going to be some steps forward and some perceived steps backwards. That's okay. Kim Jong-un's dad and his grandfather made some deals, and they hoodwinked previous administrations. And again, I think this president made it clear he wasn't going to accept the sorts of deals, and I use that in quote, that had been accepted in the past that were not in our strategic interest. We got one deal to make. The president knows that, and he's willing to call Kim Jong-un's bluff. That's what we saw yesterday.
Well, and the deals, and maybe this is a philosophical divide. The most successful foreign policy has always been one of peace through strength. We learned that with Reagan. I saw yesterday and witnessed Reykjavik, and seeing the president immediately thereafter, it was a 10-minute ride for him and his motorcade, drives right over into the room where we're doing the interview, and he was absolutely, there was nothing nonplussed by the whole thing. And what I sensed is, and this is my gut, is that I'm not doing a bad deal. I'll never do a bad deal. I don't do business like that. It'll never happen. And if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's worth a shot. And we've already had some success here. And I think that probably the person that learned that lesson well yesterday was Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, I agree. I think I just want to highlight one thing, and that is that Ambassador Nikki Haley played an incredibly important role at the United Nations getting Russia and China, and this is hard to do, to get them in on the sanctions regime, and that's been a very important part of the pressure we have brought to bear against Kim Jong-un. This puts a premium on us getting a successor, a follow-on United States UN ambassador who can carry on the efforts that Nikki Haley so effectively delivered in the sanctions regime. That's really been key. Look, we can wait this out, and I think that's been the point here. Kim Jong-un's the one suffering from all the sanctions, and now he has to go home and deal with the fact that he's not going home with any benefits that he might have hoped to derive from this meeting.
Well, bribery of dictators and despots doesn't work. We've tried it now too often. All right, so 30 years in intelligence, to the extent you're comfortable, and we're friends, I would never want to push you further than you want to go. I want you to describe what it is for 30 years you've done, where you've done it, and it's because it's like James Bond to me when I talk to you. The only downside of talking to you is, and everyone on my both staffs, TV, radio, agree, you scare the living crap out of everybody in terms of that phone you have is a microphone. They are listening in China. Putin is listening right now to your phone. It cracks me up.
Sean, what always gave me, and I think my colleagues as well, the most satisfaction was collecting intelligence on threats, overseas threats, and then doing all that we could to eliminate them so they're not visited on our shores. And when I served in the Middle East, I served in Iraq years back during the surge, and we were running sources inside Al-Qaeda, and we were obtaining intelligence from those sources on threats to the U.S. military. With the surge, we were over 100,000 U.S. troops. And the most important thing we did a lot that year. We collected a lot of intelligence. We stole a lot of secrets. But the most important, arguably the most important thing we would do was collect intelligence on threats to the U.S. military. And there were countless times when we would collect intelligence from a source in Al-Qaeda, a terrorist, about an IED located someplace or a threat to U.S. military. And within minutes, we've told the brigade commander who's swiveling the troops in a different direction. That, among lots of things, certainly gave me a lot of satisfaction.
If I had another opportunity at another job in life, I've always wanted to be a country music star. God showed me there's no chance of that ever happening because I can't sing. So my next option would be doing the types of things you have told me and you described, which I find fascinating and also very dangerous, but so important to our safety. Dan Hoffman is with us. We're in Vietnam. My interview with the president, 9 Eastern, in full tonight. The only interview he gave after the summit. That and much more. All right, as we continue, Dan Hoffman is with us, and Dan just got a big honor, and he is now a member of the President's Intelligence Advisory Board, Fox News contributor. We were talking about the 30-plus years you spent in the intelligence community. You were talking about Iraq, your time in the Middle East, but you also spent time in places like Russia, Asia, I assume China?
Not in China. I was in South Asia. I was in Afghanistan and Pakistan. I'll tell you that, you know, the backdrop of all of the meetings we had today, yesterday, Pakistan and India shooting down, you know, two nuclear-armed enemies shooting down each other's fighter planes. And that is of grave concern. And this administration simultaneously managing that crisis and dialing down the tension diplomatically.
You know, at the press conference immediately after my interview with the president, it was interesting because he had said so many times in the past that he inherited this problem. And he also went as far as to say in the last 2 weeks that he inherited what he thought was we were on the brink of war based on, you know, how many missiles would Kim Jong-un be allowed to fire over Japan and threaten the continental United States and Guam and the entire region before Donald Trump and his military started taking those little rockets right out of the sky, which would have escalated this to a very high level.
Yeah, I think one of the questions, and we won't know the answer, all of us out here, but maybe one of the questions that the president might have asked the intelligence community is, you know, does Kim Jong-un really believe that we're going to go to war over this? And maybe the answer to that was yes, and maybe that's why he stopped firing the missiles and testing his nuclear weapons.
If I had to guess, I have no inside knowledge for all you dopes in the media that think I know everything. I'm glad you give me this high honor and compliment. If I had to guess, we might have been one, two, or three missiles away from that happening, that missile being taken out of the sky. And I'm sure that message was communicated. Dan Hoffman, thank you. You've been amazing. We'll see you tonight on Hannity. My interview with President Trump in its entirety has not been aired. The only interview he gave immediately following the summit here in Vietnam. We'll take a quick break. News roundup, information overload. Geraldo's really pissed at the Democrats. Oh, he's so angry at the circus that they created yesterday. We'll get to that. We'll continue, and we will get your calls in final half hour as well. And please say a prayer that Linda doesn't have a second trip from hell as she goes back to. She left a day before me, 60-plus hours to get to Vietnam. I leave a day later at 11 p.m., nearly 2 days later, and I arrived before her. Oh, that was terrible. What airline were you on that was so great? We'll talk about it when we. When
yeah, it's the called
next
Break
hour.
Now.
Called Break Now. All right. The Break Now airline. Brand new. Go to breaknow.com. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue.
When was the last communication with President Trump or someone acting on his behalf?
So, I don't have the specific date, but it was a while ago.
And what did he or his agent communicate to you?
Unfortunately, this topic is actually something that's being investigated right now by the Southern District of New York. And I've been asked by them not to discuss and not to talk about these issues.
Fair enough. Is there any other wrongdoing or illegal act that you are aware of regarding Donald Trump that we haven't yet discussed today?
Yes, and again, those are part of the investigation that's currently being looked at by the Southern District of New York.
All right, glad you're with us as we continue from Vietnam. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Michael Cohn and his testimony yesterday where they said he was going to lay out blockbuster evidence of specific crimes, but he said, oh, the dossier is total BS. And he said no evidence of collusion, no information that the president could be blackmailed on, and goes on from there. Now, the sad thing in all of this, the tragic side of all of this, is those people that have hated Michael Cohn with a passion for all of these years after Donald Trump comes down the escalator at Trump Tower. They now used him yesterday, and now he is the subject of not one, but two specific criminal referrals. For example, we just heard him denying that he didn't want to go work at the White House. Well, there were reports all day that, in fact, everybody has text messages saying he wanted to work at the White House in a high-level specific job. Anyway, and of course, my bigger point, which is, OK, here's your modern Democratic Party. No planes, no gas, no oil, no cows, 70 to plus percent confiscation of taxes, wealth, additional taxes. Everything's going to be promised for free. Upend the single greatest wealth-creating democratic republic in the history of mankind. And, it's going to cost at least maybe $94 trillion. It's insane. All right. Anyway, here to now debate, Geraldo Rivera is with us, Fox News legal analyst, author of The Geraldo Show, and Jonathan Gillum, former FBI agent, federal air marshal. He'll be filling in on this program tomorrow as we try to make our way back from Vietnam. I just hope I don't fly with Linda, who couldn't get, she left a day early and got here hours later we call it the 60-hour flight from hell. Welcome, both of you. You know, Geraldo, last night you were so passionate, the last two nights on TV, angry even. You know, here's this moment where the president, for his part, is now looking to future generations and making the world a better, safer place, more secure. I love that he walked away from a bad deal. Kim Jong-un was testing him last night, and he looked at him and he said, no. And that's the person that I have known for all these years. That's the person that wrote in The Art of the Deal that you always got to be ready to walk away no matter what point in the negotiation, up to the last second even.
First of all, I'm very proud of you for the job that you did over there. I thought you were very statesmanlike.
Thank you.
Interview with POTUS was very eye-opening, very revealing, and you had a very good measured.
By the way, did you see me get called on at the press conference?
I did. It's been a while since you've been in that scrum, but you did well there too. You know, the anger that I displayed is real, Sean, because I'm very frustrated. As you know, people on the left or the mainstream, they have an attitude about them that they are the almost a superior class, and they pity people who believe the president of the United States. And what they have done is they fooled themselves into this mindset where, yes, I have been talking about Russian collusion for 2 years. Of course, that's been my main thrust. Oh, well, it doesn't exist. Well, now I'm really interested in Stormy Daniels. You know, a seamless kind of transition. And now it's all about the Southern District and financial crimes and income tax. They have to be held to account for 2 years of slandering this man, creating the climate of confrontation and division in the country, wherein it got so far that the acting director of the FBI could say in interview after interview, Andrew McCabe, that it was possible the president was an asset of Vladimir Putin and the Russians. I think this is outrageous. And if I don't call it out, who's going to? I'm in the middle. I'm roadkill. But I see things from both sides, and I have to say I am so scornful of the mainstream and how they have absolutely, in the most derogatory way, slandered and undermined the president with this BS about Russian collusion, Sean.
Well, it's gone on now for 2 years, and here we find ourselves as a country. They couldn't have put this aside, Jonathan Gillum, for just a couple of days. I mean, it's been two long years, and they trot out Michael Cohen for 3 days in a row. And now what do we know? Now he got himself, as a result of being used by the Democrats, not one, but two criminal referrals, brand new criminal referrals, one for the possibility of committing perjury, one for violating the FARA Act, which was an issue, as you remember, with Paul Manafort. And now he has been put in serious, significant legal jeopardy because now the whole world sees it. And I got to believe he may be in serious new legal trouble.
Well, let me say this before I say what I'm going to say about Cohen. I am so proud of Geraldo coming on here and saying what he's saying. And I think more people are in the true middle now. They're not, you know, so far to the left or to the right. But I'm going to go even further a little bit than about what he was saying about the media, because let's look at what Elijah Cummings did yesterday when he is in charge of that whole committee. And he says out loud, it appears that the president committed a crime. Now, he's not judge and jury, and he's an attorney, and he knows going out there and saying these things. And the way he was talking about Cohen as being this guy who rose to the occasion, did all these things, it is like a Saturday Night Live skit with teeth, and they're in collusion with the media. It frustrates me so bad because we can't count on journalists to do the right thing. We can't count on representatives of the people in D.C. to do the right thing. And all of it comes down on the shoulders of Donald Trump while he's trying to do something like, you know, broker a nuclear deal and a disarmament deal with a dictator. This is astounding to the point that we've gotten where it's so low that they're trying to get rid of Donald Trump that they will go to these levels. When we look at Cohen, I agree with you. It's all nonsense anyway, but I think it should go away while the president's trying to do real business that has to do with the national security of our country. But when we look at Cohen and his behavior, and Geraldo can tell you this, he's seen this stuff because he's been close to a lot of these bad guys, whether it's interviewing or his attorney. You know, they love to minimize their guilt. And what happens a lot of the times is when they get up there and they minimize, they end up lying. And when they do that under oath, they get in trouble. And that's what he did yesterday. He minimized. And when you're doing that, you end up saying things or going down a road that you have to stick with. And now you're caught in a lie. And the whole thing is just a mess.
Well, I mean, that's the other point. You know, Geraldo, yesterday you went into and the president said this in the full interview that I'm going to air tonight on Hannity on the Fox News channel. The only interview he did after the summit, and how the president benefits from the 5%, as he said last night and said to me, that was truthful of Michael Cohen, and we just played some of it. There was no collusion, and that whole dossier was all BS, and there were numerous lies about Michael Cohen. And now, I know one spectacular lie in there about him, just like the Russian hookers peeing on the bed in the Ritz-Carlton in Moscow, but the other one is Michael Cohen was never to Prague. And again, I knew him well at the time. I'm mad at the fact that he didn't tell the truth. I was never his client. He did apologize, which I appreciated. And there are some other issues that I'm frankly a little bit mad about. But I knew where he was. He was at something that was actually pretty spectacular in the United States for his family. And I don't want to divulge the details of which. And I knew it was false, just like so many other things in that dossier were false. And now he's corroborating the major argument that they have been making for years.
You know, Sean, if you look at the New York Times today, I know you're in Hanoi, but if you look at the New York Times today, there is no mention on the front page of what should have been the headline, "The No Collusion Says Cohen." There's nothing like that in the paper today. It has been ignored. If you look at MSNBC, if you look at CNN, there is virtually no editorial about the profoundly significant point that the biggest snitch, the government's strongest witness, the deep insider, says there's no evidence. He knows of nothing having to do with collusion. So for 2 years, we've heard that BS, and it's all amounted to a hill of beans. The dossier, now riddled with known falsehoods. Prague, you had McClatchy, the newspaper organization, saying that they had Michael Cohen in Prague and that his cell phone pinged in Prague, showing that he was in communication with Russians, and he's never, ever been there. Where's the apology from the McClatchy papers? BuzzFeed saying that Cohen was coached by Trump to lie to Congress.
Geraldo, what's going to happen to all these so-called news organizations that have propagandized, that have hysterically, breathlessly reported one issue after another regarding the president that turns out to be false? Are they going to apologize? Will they be held accountable? Will the real Russian colluders, now will they be ever held accountable, like Hillary, for example, paying for a phony Russian dossier? I think she should be.
BuzzFeed, now BuzzFake. I appreciate that media is evolving and that there's more of these gung-ho digital outfits out there. But you got to get it right. And if you get it wrong, you have to apologize, and you have to do so in a speedy manner, not in what's going on now. They've hung our president out to dry. And I want to know from some real insider national security analyst whether or not the president's problems in the United States with this simultaneous charade of his show with Michael Cohen, whether that had any effect on undermining the president sufficiently to help torpedo the crucial negotiation.
Look, I wasn't watching cable at all at the time I came up in the air, 9 a.m. Vietnam time yesterday, but I'm told by people that were back home that if you turned on the other news networks, as the president is meeting and shaking hands with Kim Jong-un to denuclearize the entire Korean Peninsula, which is rather profound, while that was happening, guess what? They weren't covering it, Jonathan. They wanted to lock in and stay with Cohen and continue the never-ending coverage of bludgeoning Trump for any reason, without facts or truth usually behind it.
But this is, yes, you're absolutely right. And what we see a lot of the times, there's so many, and forgive me for this, Geraldo, you may agree or not with this, but there's so many attorneys now. The whole Washington, D.C. is filled with attorneys. Almost all the guests you ever see on news in the media anymore are attorneys. And what they do when they cover this stuff, it's the same type of game that you see between two attorneys where they're trying to convince people of guilt or not guilt, not truth. And that's what they do in the news now when they cover these stories. And if from an intelligence standpoint, I'm telling you right now that if they can go in and cause any type of disruption in, and this is what's crazy, right? They're going to cause disruption in our own president's mind while he's over there. That could be very detrimental to the way he is negotiating with these highly trained experts.
I agree.
Stay right there. More with Geraldo, more with Jonathan Gillum. When we come back, final half hour, wide open telephones, anything you want to talk about. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. My exclusive and the only exclusive interview the president gave, that's with me, airing in total tonight from Vietnam as we continue after this historic summit. All right, as we continue with Geraldo Rivera and Jonathan Gillum. You know, Geraldo, one thing you always say, even when we're battling over the border, and I think you've actually come around a lot because you want to solve the problem. You always keep saying, I want this president to succeed. I know. How many kids do you have total?
Five.
Okay.
Thank you for reminding me. They're all still more or less dependent.
You're not a grandfather yet, right?
I am a four-time over grandfather, and they've just begun having children.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So you're a grandfather, and you know, you think about if you have a chance, you know, before you and I and Jonathan leave this earth one day, wouldn't you like to know that it was it's a little safer than it once was? No more rockets, no more threatening the continental United States, Guam, the whole peninsula. Wouldn't it be a good thing if that happened? I've got a role. You guys have been amazing, and you guys should host the show together one day. I know Jonathan's hosting tomorrow. I'll be home Saturday afternoon, all right? So I need one day off just to get home. We'll see you then. Thanks, guys. We'll wrap up our final radio half hour coming up from Hanoi in Vietnam and Hannity tonight, my interview with the president, 9 Eastern, 9 a.m. Vietnam time. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Glad you are with us. Wrapping up, this will be our last day in Hanoi, only because it's a trek to get back home. Not a lot of flights. I think we even have after TV. What do we have, a 12-hour delay before we can go wheels up? So it's a pretty long period of time. Maybe I can actually get some sleep. That'd be nice. So our friend Jonathan Gillum will be in here tomorrow. But tonight we will air the only interview the president gave. It was with me immediately following the summit with Kim Jong-un. It was interesting how this all worked behind the scenes because we were told, be flexible. Be there, be flexible. It's very fluid. Nobody knows. Here's a scheduled time. Next thing I know, 2 hours before the scheduled time, they decided to move up the press conference. And that was the first indication that maybe I need to go put a real shirt on and, you know, do the little hair combing thing that I do on TV, which is stupid. apparently everybody with the pictures you've been posting on Twitter.
Everybody likes the natural look.
I have a natural look. When you can't have your hair, you know, like Bernie Sanders on TV.
Bernie Sanders doesn't have any hair.
Well, it's like the disheveled.
He looks like the mad scientist.
Socialist, communist, hippie.
He gave it away. He shared his hair with everyone.
I think he went to Woodstock and he didn't hear the message about the green acid versus the brown acid. You just can't do it. Like, it really kills me because our friend Dan Bongino is with us a lot this week.
Yes.
He and Dan Hoffman both have been amazing. And what's funny is Dan Bongino doesn't wear a tie on Fox. Eric Boland never wore a tie on Fox.
What tie is fitting around the neck of Dan Bongino? Dan Bongino wore a tie when he guest hosted your TV show. He looked ridiculous.
He is lifted.
He looked like he was being choked to death.
Did he really?
It was awful. I was like, I texted him. I'm like, Dan, you got to take it off. It looks terrible. He's like, I can't. They won't let me. I can't. I'm like, Oh, my God. Yeah, it was really bad.
Well, Dan works out like I thought I worked out like a madman. And look at Mr. Triathlete here. What do you do those specials? What are those?
Ironman.
Ironman. He does Ironman marathons, which is insane. Oh, Dan Hoffman. Every time we're here, because... You know, the time is backwards.
You know, I worked out every day, too.
All right. Is it all about you? We can't talk about others?
Oh, my God. We just spent 5 minutes talking about all you men and your bromance of each other's, you know, wonderful workout and your athletic ability.
Okay. The good news is that I had a new suit on last night. This is a pretty funny story. Very funny story.
For Kristen. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Poor Kristen.
So because I did lose a lot of weight recently, I lost about 12 pounds.
You're so skinny.
Okay. Thank you.
I've been calling you manorexic for years, so.
Well, this time it finally worked because I stuck to it and sticking to it. There's only one thing that works for me, and you know I've tried everything.
I know. But your idea of trying is doing it for 3 days. But go ahead.
No, not this time. And are you done?
No.
Can I finish the story?
I've got hours of material.
So I had a new suit that we brought with us. And the best part is I put it on and I'm like, oh my gosh, it doesn't fit. I mean, it was, you know, when you kind of look like you have a...
You're wearing your father's suit.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's mm-hmm. exactly how it felt.
Yep.
So that was some good news. All right, what is your... Oh, Dan Hoffman, you see him swimming lap after lap after lap, you know...
He's a beast.
For hours.
He's a beast.
And I'm like...
He's got two young sons. He's got work to do. He's got to stay in shape.
Who wants to get in the water in Vietnam at 3 a.m. local time?
Okay.
Dan Hoffman.
He's eating with his hands in the bare grounds of Afghanistan. I don't think swimming in the pool is killing him.
Oh, I was warned the whole time on my way over here. Don't turn your phone on. Ever. And then the next thing I was warned about, probably assume that your shower is being videotaped. And then the next thing
what are you doing in the shower? Water. What's going on in there? You're very stressed out about the shower.
I'm not stressed out about the shower. That's Dan.
Maybe it's time to start taking baths.
All right. What was your workout this week? Because everybody wants to hear it. And then I want to tell the story. We're all going to say a little prayer for you getting home.
I think what I want to talk about more is the fact that CNN yesterday had to broadcast real news. I mean, here in my hotel, I only have CNN. It's a very sad thing. And I've never watched CNN before. So it's been a real education in fake news. And so yesterday, at 2:30 in the morning, our time, and 2:30 here, president starts giving his, you know, his press conference about everything. And I'm watching it. Okay, fine. Chris and I are texting. Yay. Sean's in the press corps. I'm like, what? So then I see him say, oh, there's this fella Sean over there. Nobody knows who he is. And I'm like, oh my God. So I take my phone out and I start taping my television.
Oh, that's funny.
It's hysterical. And so I have the chyron of CNN and the president here giving, you know, and it's on Hannity.com, if any of you want to see it, all things Sean at Hannity.com. Just a little plug. And then comes on Sean and he goes, hi, I'm Sean Hannity, talk radio and TV host. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, this is amazing. Yeah. It was just the funniest thing ever. But to see you in the CNN things.
I don't think it got picked up on TV, but the mic didn't work originally. I'm like,
well, I knew, I said to Blair, I was like, something must be wrong. Because as soon as you picked up, I'm like, you're like, this thing on, mic's on. I'm like, oh God. I'm like, you're subtle, like a Mack truck.
Well, I want to say one serious point, and then we're going to all go through what you're going to remember the most about this trip.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But I will say this. The person that I liked the most in the cabinet, and I'm not picking favorites here, but by far, in terms of intelligence, work ethic.
You know what that means, right? The person I like the most, that's your favorite. You know that. But go ahead.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is Pompeo. Mm-hmm. Pompeo is the rock star of the president's cabinet. So smart, such a warm personality. As a matter, I didn't tell you yet, but we're going to D.C. next week, and we're going to sit down probably early in the week. All right, let's start, and we're going to do a what was your finest moment? What was your most fun moment? We'll start with Blair, who, by the way, I've got to give a lot of credit to, who made sure that this broadcast quality was as the best humanly possible. And I've gotten great rave reviews from our affiliates and from friends. So great job. And thank you for making the trek, 60-hour trek with Linda. Nobody else could have handled that. You were the only one.
I'm sorry. Was that like a painful thing for him?
Yeah.
No comment.
Oh,
exactly, right?
Man, wow.
No, I think the thing I took away the most is how nice the people are here.
Amazing.
I was in a food store, and I had like three things with me. Diet Coke for James. And everyone in line said to go in front of them. Everyone. They said, go ahead. I'm like, what? In New York, they'd look at you like, you know, you had leprosy.
Imagine if you were behind Linda and you jumped in front of her in New York.
Forget it. She cleaned the floor with you.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I think that was the biggest thing is how kind people are. And they don't speak any English. And it's amazing.
Totally agree. That stands out in a way that's profound. Really touchingly profound. All right, Linda. It's you. You're next.
Well, let's let James go next. James,
all right, sweet baby James. What was the thing that stands out the most to you? Yeah, just keep banging those microphones. That sounds great on radio.
That sounds amazing.
From the experience, Sean, akin to what Blair said. You know, there's something about the human spirit. You know, our desire to get ahead, maybe to be free. Here we are, like under a communist regime, and they work so hard, and they're so appreciative of, like, you know, the stories you tell about, like, you know, a tip or, you know, a little graciousness on our part. And it's a profound lesson in the universality of the human spirit, you know, the what people want, what works.
Are we going to sing John Lennon, Give Peace a Chance now?
Wow, that makes my supermarket story sound.
But to James's credit, and I mean this sincerely, we call him Sweet Baby James for a reason, is that James has a heart of gold. That's why we love you more than anything. If you do great work, but we love you for your heart more than anything. All right, Linda.
Yeah. My favorite thing in Vietnam. Well, since I haven't left the hotel, because all I do is work.
Why would you leave? It looks like Saddam Hussein's palace.
I'm in the palace. I have to say, I'm going to give you one funny anecdote from my experience here. So imagine what it looks like, everybody. Every day, I sleep all day in this giant suite. At night, six men come to my room and they stay here all night long. We order coffee and food. The waiters come in 2-3 in the morning and we're all sitting here in this room together. The only other person here that's a female is Kristen.
And there's one guy ranting and raving
and
loudly
hours. They have no idea what's happening. I mean, they must be down there thinking.
But you're going to have an extra day. And so are you going to go, you and Blair are going like.
We're
going to
go sightsee. I'm going to go get some toys for Liam.
Oh,
I should tell you one thing, though.
Oh, no, that means another three bags.
I won't do that.
Right, check your watch.
Blair's actually a gentleman.
I want to make sure
he
get
does.
Everybody in. How much time do we have left? Because I want to tell a quick story.
Let's do everybody.
All right, before that, I took her toy shopping once for Liam. After what trip was that?
We were in Boca after Rush Limbaugh.
Okay, after we did the interview with Rush. So we go to a Target. We go to the toy section.
First of all, I told you not to come. And you were in.
I was going to have to sit in the car, and I knew you'd take 400 hours. So I went in with you. James was with me. And what did.
And Gomez.
And Gomez was with me, my best friend from third grade. So we take out. She's like looking at every train and analyzing it and looking at the price of the train. And I looked at everybody. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And I took a basket. And I started throwing all the trains in the basket. And I said, let's go. No more decisions.
Yeah,
we're
you know
done.
What happened to me? I had to carry all those bags alone on Amtrak.
That's your problem.
All the way home on Amtrak alone. I'm not kidding.
You need to be able to make a decision faster.
Okay, Kristen, tell your story.
Come on. What is your memory that you're taking out
You'll need to get a little closer to the microphone.
Yeah, this is radio.
Yeah. I know 60 feet feels cool, but it's not.
Okay.
Well, it's pretty cliche, but I think my favorite part of this trip was seeing Sean Hannity on a scooter because Sean hates, you know, going out and about because he needs to stay on New York time. So he's just been cloistered in his room the entire time. And we've, you know, been trying to go out and see things. And then it turns out that Sean Hannity does the coolest and bravest thing out of all of us. So, yeah. And then
you and Tom were in the car.
All of a sudden, Tom asks me, because his seat was wet, because it was also raining that day. So next thing I know, Sean is like, is there something to wipe the seat off? I turn around, look back, they're literally gone. So I'm like, all righty then. So see you soon.
Now, you did make it. I would have made it, but no time to get dressed, put makeup on.
Yeah, you would have had 10 minutes and on Hannity time. No.
All right, Dan Hoffman. Now, this is probably going to be hard for you because you've been everywhere in the world and you're so used to being abroad for long periods of time. But I'm curious, you know, what is your takeaway as we leave?
Well, actually, I think that I'm looking to the future. You know, there's just so much yet to be done. I think we accomplished a lot at this summit. But it's just, you know, this is as different as anything could be for me from my 30 years I served in the U.S. government. Here I am now covering events for the media, which is a huge honor to be doing it with you. And the outstanding team here, I'll tell you, we all keep a seriousness of purpose, and you can tell there's a sense of humor in the room, and I think that's how you get by. But I'm just looking forward to where this is going to take us over the coming weeks and months.
You know, I know that that is your life and your work and your passion, and so I have a very good feeling about it. I think that every indication is Kim's going to go home. He's going to be in a state of shock for a couple of weeks because he didn't think Trump was going to walk away. And I think because other U.S. presidents have capitulated and they have been weak. And I think that eventually he's going to say, all right, do I want this deal for my country and my people? And the president was saying, oh, this will be the biggest economic success ever. And it would be quickly. Tom is with us. How many years are you on the NYPD?
I was 20 years with the NYPD.
Yeah. Now you're stuck protecting me in Vietnam on a moped or scooter.
Yeah, 10 years with Fox. My takeaway is the coordination of assets here within the law enforcement community, the support from the Secret Service, who could not have been better, the military assets. It really ran smooth. It was a well-oiled machine. Support we had, the camaraderie.
So you're looking at it really like the backstory that nobody knows about or sees.
Yes, exactly.
It's an operation.
It is.
And how many people did we meet in intelligence? How many people did we meet in law enforcement, Secret Service? The guys we were drinking with at the bar that one day, Marines from Okinawa.
Yes.
Right, that has been stationed. I saw them again. They were all getting pictures. Not all of them, but most of them were getting pictures. Remember the big guy from Tennessee?
Yeah.
He was getting his picture taken with the president. And he was right next to the president. It was like 12 guys. Oh, you want me to break and not talk about what I think?
Break. Time to break.
So I don't get to say what I'm taking out of this.
You talk all the time. We'll get it later.
Oh, man. That's so cold. I love. All of you have been amazing. None of this happens without. We have such a great, the best staff in radio and TV ever. And an engineering team that is able to pull this off. My interview with the president tonight in full. It's the only exclusive interview he gave right after the summit with Kim Jong-un, and we'll air that in its entirety, 9 Eastern, tonight on Fox News. That's going to wrap things up for today, and frankly, radio in Vietnam. Let not your heart be troubled. All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, Fox News. My exclusive, extensive interview with the President of the United States, the only one he gave right after his summit with Kim Jong-un. We talk about the deal, what went on behind the scenes. 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox News. Hope you'll join us. Have a great weekend. We'll see you tonight at 9 and from Vietnam and back in New York on Monday. Have a great weekend.